7 o'clock, I'm calling to order the Pappy Missouri River Natural Resources Board of Directors meeting on November 10th of 2016. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedures that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will hear the subcommittee chairperson's report and their proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to address the board chairperson. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. All questions and comments will be addressed to the chair board. For the board chair, we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion or actions. Thank you. Quorum call, please.
Bonnet.
Present.
Fred Conley.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Fowler.
Here.
Frost.
Yep.
Leahy.
Here.
Gray.
Here.
Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Poodle.
Here.
And chair.
Present. Item number four, adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second.
A motion and second. Roll call on the motion.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yep.
Leahy.
Yes.
Gray.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
And Sherford.
Yes. Agenda item 5, adoption of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
All right, with a motion and second, roll call on the motion.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Gray.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
And Sherford.
Yes. I have the affidavit of proof of publication for the meeting notes. It will become part of the permanent record for this evening. Moving on to agenda item 8, agency and association reports and presentations. 8A, Natural Resources Conservation Service report. Neil Jensen.
Good evening.
Evening, Neil.
I'm not going to read this whole magazine to you, but so don't panic there. First thing I want to talk about is conservation innovation grants. This is somewhat of a new program. Well, actually, it's been going on since about 2006. It's part of the EQIP. But what's different about this program is instead of producers being able to apply to this, almost anyone can. Companies can, individual companies, individual persons can apply for these grants. And a lot of it has to do with getting conservation on the ground, promoting conservation on the ground. And so the focus area they talk about is developing tools to better educate people on what conservation there is out there. And I didn't have a real good idea as to really how to explain that to you until I was reading the Nebraska Farmer about the hour before coming down here. And there was a couple of articles in here from the university that I thought would be a good indication of what type of tools are they talking about. One of the articles, it talks about grass snap. This is something that the University Extension created, and it's to help grassland farmers watch the trends. They take pictures of a field every year in the same spot, and then they can watch the trends. Is the pasture improving, or is it declining year after year? And so this would be one of the type of tools that could be developed to improve conservation on the ground. Another tool that university created called Next Generation Sensors may automate irrigation. And, you know, this is something that this grant could be used to create these tools. Now, don't get away with thinking that this program just developed those two tools. Didn't. But it's an example of maybe what tools they're talking about as to promoting conservation. The other thing would be demonstrations. If you go kind of to the second page up at the top, they talk about these are some of the projects that were funded previously, and I just picked some cover crop demonstration projects. So that would be out on the farm, bring farmers in to show cover crops. Pollinator and beneficial insect plantings for organic and specialty crop producers. Ephemeral gully assessment and adoption of preventative measures to reduce erosion in cultivated croplands. So it's teaching producers what works to control ephemeral erosion, gully erosion. Soil health, and then irrigation scheduling systems. But, you know, real wide variety, forestry, bringing kids into classrooms and teaching them. That one surprised me compared to a lot of the others that were in here. So it's kind of really open as to, and a lot of them, as small as a $2,000 grant up to $75,000. And then some of the national grants went up near a million. But you can get on the website and take a look at what type of things people were applying for. I know Nebraska has had several of these grants that have been approved over the years. And some of them are NRDs that have used these. So something you can look into. The other thing then is they continue to expand CRP. They've got a new program for small livestock operations, small in being basically the 140 animal units is what they consider. So that'd be about on beef cattle, about 140 head is what they would consider a small animal unit. But they can put 200 acres of grassland into the CRP program. They would have to graze that according to a conservation plan, but they would also, you know, most CRP, you have to exclude livestock. In this case, they're able to graze the acres that they put in.
Is this existing grasslands, or can you say that?
Don't know that. This really just come out about a week ago, and FSA is administers this program, so would need to talk to them. But it's probably looking at more native grassland than say brome grass. That one, the program by December 16th, you would need to sign up for it, but obviously this is probably a program that's going to continue into the future. And so that's all I've got for tonight. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Neil. Moving on to 8A, or 8B, Nebraska Association of Resource Districts, Director Rich Teaser.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This coming weekend or Sunday, I get to drive out to Chadron, Nebraska, which Jane told me was 900 miles round trip, so I'm pretty looking forward to it for an hour and a half meeting. And
you're a good man, Rick.
I know. And I'll report back next month.
All right.
That's all I have,
sir. Thank you, George Teaser. HC, a legislative report, Hush Blackwell.
Good evening, Tim Gay with Hush Blackwell, Steve Gross. The handout you have, we stayed consistent with what we were handing out last in the primaries, but so it's a little messy, but it has the district that they're in too. That's kind of important to some people because where do they represent? So that's on the back side. But on page two, obviously we just finished up the election. 25 of the 49 seats were up for election. 13 seated senators were facing re-election. 11 of them were term limited, so they're just out. We had 6 incumbents that were defeated, and 17 new senators elected. So that's 35% of the legislature was changed, and that will happen again next go around. I think 2 years from now we're going to lose another 10 or something. So busy night, and you can see there are a few upsets, as there always is, but in general, probably what people were saying, what's changed? Not a whole lot, to be honest with you, besides the faces. I mean, that's going to change, of course, but as look at the 2017 legislature with those elections, there's still 15 Democrats, one independent, which is Senator Chambers, one Libertarian, Senator Epke, and then there's still 32 Republicans. That's about exactly what we were, plus or minus one on the Democrats, I think. So I know there's talk, you know, is the governor supporting people, and is he just going to have whatever he wants to do? I don't think that's going to happen. Of those 32 Republicans, there's going to be some that are, you know, well, they all think for themselves, let's put it that way. So that's what's happening. The exciting things will be happening, of course, is there's going to be new Speaker of the Legislature coming up. All new committee chairs will be elected, and senators will be moving around in different committees. This is our time to say, hey, maybe I don't want to be anymore on a natural resources committee. I'm going to revenue or vice versa, whatever. So I looked at that, and natural resources committee, of course, is one of the most important committees for you. There's three for sure senators that won't be coming back. The chairman, Senator Shills, is term limited. And then Senator Johnson was defeated, and Senator Schnorr was defeated in the election, so they won't be back. I looked at some of those different issues coming up, and this is just anybody's guess, but budget shortfall, $1 billion budget shortfall, that's going to be the main thing. They got to put together a budget before they leave. I don't know if there's room for tax breaks or whatever they want to do. Tax reform, there's a lot of talk on that. We'll see how that happens or what plans will be out there. Another big issue is 35% of the people that are new senators. So they're going to be new to their committee. They're going to be new to the legislature. It's just a learning curve. So what does that do on bills that are introducing? You know, I doubt after a hard campaign they're coming in with a lot of great bills to throw out there, but lobbyists, of course, will have some to give to them. But will that bring the bill numbers down? Who knows? And then the new leadership that I just talked about. And then also one factor, too, Senator Chambers is back, of course, and he's probably not too happy with the repeal of the death penalty and some other issues that are going on. What will he do with the whole time that he has once they go out of that committee? Remember, they start introduce bills for the first 10 days. We'll start going to committees all day, clear almost into March. And then you'll have the last 35, 40 days to debate bills that get out of committee. And then we got all the prioritization and all that. So at the end of the day, not a whole lot of time left. And just wait and see. It'll be very interesting. Let's put it that way. So that's kind of our report. We'll be back for sure in January and let you know by the meeting. We should know who's on every committee. The chairs will have a nice update of those for you. I know John Winkler is always out still. We're out meeting, and he had some good articles in the paper, I thought, that were very kind of explained what you do very well. And I think that article was last month, so that's a good one to bring to their attention again and just make general introductions. So that's our plan right now. Steve, did you have something?
Yeah, I guess just a couple things. I think we can assume that our new Congressman Bacon will be supportive of issues surrounding Offutt Air Force Base, and of course we need to get to know him and educate him a little bit on that. But the only other thing I would to give you is just a little update on the local elections in terms of ballot counting. You may not be aware that there's approximately 11,000 ballots yet to be counted in Douglas County and about 1,500 yet to be counted in Sarpy County. About half of those in Douglas County are early voting ballots that were received on Election Day. They've not been counted yet. They will be counted tomorrow, and the new result will be released sometime tomorrow. The remaining half of those 11,000 ballots will be counted. Those are provisional ballots, and they will be finished counting those by next Tuesday. And that's a very difficult, long process. They have to see whether the person is registered to vote or not. If they are, they count the ballot. They have to complete that by Tuesday, and then if they don't release the next batch of results until a week from Friday from those ballots. And then the official canvas is November 23rd.
One disclaimer I might make. There is one race out in Grand Island that's right now within 15 votes maybe, or maybe a little more. Very close, but Dan Quick has the lead. I don't know the details of if that will change or not, but it's very close. Justin Waynes was obviously very close. I don't think that will go to a recall. And then one thing I did bring up, Senator Kalowski got reelected, and he's always been a big advocate for you. He got reelected, and I talked to him earlier, no guarantee, but I think he's staying on the committees he's going to stay on, which is education and natural resources. That's kind of his sweet spot, and that's a good news for you. So that was something to pay attention to as well. And then one more thing, too. We were, during all these elections, I mean, obviously we're following very closely. We were very engaged financially with some other clients and things as well, and paying attention to what's going on. So we had a good chance to meet a lot of them, win or lose. I think we've got a good relationship started, whether they be Republican or Democrat. They were all fine candidates, to be honest with you. They're very good crop of candidates in my mind. So I think we will hit the ground a little bit running, too, because we've made a lot of good relations with them. And I think that does benefit all of our clients. So I wanted to put that out there. We're busy. I'm glad the election's over. You are, too. But, so, any questions that we can answer?
Director Leahy.
So a lot was made in the news about the governor being active in a lot of these races. Mm-hmm. Where does the governor stand? I guess I don't know about the bonding authority that may come up again next year. And just, or is it a weed? I mean, I'm sure you guys are talking to him. But it's his office pretty.
I'll try to answer that best I can. If it gets out of committee, first of all, that bill hasn't got out of committee. Senator Kalowski, whether he introduces it or not, I don't know. We haven't talked to him, and we haven't had that conversation. If he reintroduces that, first thing would be you'd have to decide, is that something we want to push? First of all, you have to take a vote on it. And then a lot of times what the governor does, director, is kind of keep their powder dry. They don't tell you until they have to. If they really hate something, then they'd probably come out and say, we don't like it. But usually they'll wait. If it gets out of committee, then we'll start talking to them, engaging them. Just overall, I don't think the governor's for any kind of tax increase or bonding or whatever. But yet there's a lot of bonds that happen. I mean, you just got to watch it. So I think each case would be different. Can't speak for the governor, but I can speak to, they usually don't tell you until... Until they have to deal with it, basically.
They usually don't get involved in legislation.
If they hate it, they will. If they love it. If they have somebody introduce bills for them, of course they're proponents of that. But if they really dislike something, and I think, quite honestly, he learned a lesson in the first term when he didn't come out right away and say, I don't like this, that, or look what it got us. So he's much more astute on those things, and they're much better organized than they were. Of course, in his defense, is just coming in, and you got to put everything together, so it's tough. So did I dodge that question? Well,
yeah. Yeah. Now I know what will pay you. That, you
know.
Director Bonner?
Two questions. First, are there any interim studies that you're tracking that pertain to the Natural Resources District or those senators that serve on that committee? And secondly,
The first one, there were hardly any. We had watched them. We monitor them. They kick out every hearing, but you see them right after the session. We looked at those, and there are very few. And part of the reason was senators up for election. Some were term limited. They just didn't introduce anything. But the chairman was leaving, Senator Shills, so they didn't take on any huge initiatives. And then they just got done over the years dealing with water and everything else. I think the committee was just exhausted, quite honestly. So there wasn't a whole lot, but we do pay attention to revenue and some of those things and try to keep our ear to the ground. But there was no organized interim studies. Now, next year, I think there will be with, just like Senator Kalowski would be a good example. He got reelected, so he knows he can work on something longer term, so he might throw something out there. And that's good for things that don't get done in the year to say, let's do a little more study and get some more information on. That's really what those are for.
Okay. How about the water transport? Is there anything new that's come up, especially in light of the election?
The Water Task Force, Sustainability Fund, that. The only thing I can really say on that, I assume it's, I haven't heard a whole lot of complaints or screaming. I mean, I have and I haven't. But I did read an article that Senator Mike Groney wrote, and they all write their articles. And it was mentioned in there of, hey, we got to look at a lot of different things that could be cut. And that was one of the things he mentioned, one amongst many. But they're going to look at a lot of tax incentives and those things. But the Water Sustainability Fund did make his list, and he's out in North Platte, and he's very, he's very well educated as far as understanding policy. So if that's something he wants to throw in, I don't know. I didn't follow up on it that much.
And in about a month, we should know the results of the funding requests for the second go around.
That might make a difference. Yeah.
In December. Yeah. Any further questions? Thank you, John.
All right, thank you.
All right, 8D, update on Papillion Creek Hydrology, Mike Sotak, and Bob Gregolunas. Did I get that right?
That was perfect.
Cool.
Better than these days. Good evening, everybody. We've got a PowerPoint presentation here to go through. We'll try to go through this. There's a lot of information here, so stop us if you hear something you want to get an explanation on or save the question for later. That's up to you. A little bit of a background on this study and where it came from was, I guess in the past several years and some of the work that we've done for you and other clients in the watershed, we've noticed that the models that were used to develop the floodplain maps are some level of conservancy. In those, they're definitely conservative models. We had always felt that there was an opportunity to maybe go in and I guess, pare down a little bit some of the statistical reliability of the models. But one of the things we've always said is that you can do that, but it's not going to make a really big difference until some of the flood control in the that's identified in the plan gets put in as well. So once Site 15A, obviously recently constructed, Site 5 being constructed a couple years ago, and now 6 and 7 under final design, that makes a pretty big difference in the West Branch. And so when we were doing economics for the Water Sustainability Fund for WP 6 and 7, had actually gone in and kind of revisited the model a little bit and looked at that. And with those dams and with some new updates that we're going to talk about in terms of hydrologic modeling parameters and methods, we had gone to the entity and said, this is going to be a pretty significant change here. And maybe it's time to look at maybe updating some of those maps. In the meantime, FEMA had come back to the entity and basically said, hey, we've got new maps for you. And the typical bearer of bad news that they are, the floodplains got bigger and we've got a lot of additional structures in there. The time seemed right to go in and look at what we could do to maybe take some of that level of conservatism out of the models and get them a little bit better to what they should be. So with that, once we started doing that, the entity said, well, let's look at Little Papillion Creek and Big Papillion Creek too. So that's what this thing's about. So now we're going to get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts, and Bob's going to talk a little bit about some of the technical aspects of the study that we're doing, and then I'm going to talk at the end a little bit about what that means in terms of flood insurance.
If you have any questions as we go on, just stop me. That's definitely not a problem. So if anything's not clear, I'd be happy to answer any questions. So as Mike said, obviously there's been a lot of updates within the basin since 2008, obviously the regional detention centers. Some of the things that also changed is that NOAA came back with new rainfall a few years ago. And so basically the rainfall depths that we had used for years were updated, and in this area alone, they went up by about 0.8 inches, which is very significant. So it was about 6.7 inches. Now it's closer to 7.5 inches over a 24-hour period. So that's something that we're fighting against now because obviously it's more rainfall, more runoff to store. The next thing is that NOAA came up with new temporal distributions. I'll talk just briefly about those in a minute. Since really 2005, 2006, there has been just incredible improvements in the way that we can process radar images to get detailed rainfall estimates over a large area. And I'll talk about that very briefly. New gauge updates, USGS has calibrated your alert gauges in some locations, and those have provided excellent information for some of the recent storm events. So, and that's actually why we're able to do what we're able to do here. And of course, unfortunately, it always rains. Significant rainfall events, those give us good points to calibrate against and let us truth the model and make sure everything makes sense. So we've been contracted basically to update temporal distributions, error reduction factors. I'll describe those in a minute. We're tasked with recalibrating the hydrologic model. Basically, that means run a real rainfall event through it, and let's see how the model predicts that and how close it is. We had to include the new regional detention sites, reprocess the hydraulic model, so basically we had to figure out what the new floodplains would look like. And then from there, we're on to that last task, which is get the modeling ready for FEMA review and updated mapping. So a temporal distribution, just so you're aware, how quick does the rain fall within the basin? And the old data is basically this line here, shakiest guy in the room with a laser. That's always good. And what you can see here is this is a very, very steep curve. That means it rains hard, it rains fast, and it's over very quickly. And what we've been able to do is basically put together several additional options for distributions that we can use. And that is, we have more confidence in it, so we're less conservative, which means we can provide a kind of a softer rainfall event, which is a great help throughout the basin.
So a little bit of a outsider point of view of this. And so what's important in these is that you look at them, these kind of look like the S, that kind of rising limb on the S. And the steepness of that is really what dictates the severity of the rainfall. The steeper it is means the more rainfall that's occurring in a very short amount of time. So as you can see with these other lines here, and so what we found out by looking at these is that it's actually physically impossible to rain that much, working with the hydrometeorological consultants. And so that's just kind of a grab that's always been there. It's a standard distribution that we've always used because, you know, it's a government-issued document, and it's conservative. We know that. And so it's something that we've always used and designed to. And so that was one of the reasons why that was one of the items that we looked at in detail.
Next is what's called an aerial reduction factor. So we get a real small localized thunderstorm, we can get that full potential 7.5 inches. But as you get larger and larger thunderstorms, what the meteorological consultant has come up with is that there's just not enough moisture that can be transferred into storms in this area. And because of that, we've been able to revise these curves. So as basically the storm size increases, as we get towards that 400 square mile mark, and that's the whole Papillion Creek watershed, what we are able to do is before this gray line allowed us to take off a whole 7% off of the rainfall depth for the whole basin. What we've been able to do now is extend that and get down all the way to the point where we're taking off over 30% of the rainfall depth that occurs in that basin for the largest storm event. Just because, again, history, 50 years of additional data has proved that we just don't get that much rain when it covers that big of a watershed. And this is a very big help to the basin.
And so both of these things that we're working on, we do have a sub-consultant on this. It's called AWA, Applied Weather Associates. They're based in Monument, Colorado. You've heard their name before. You actually participated in funding a statewide PMP study that we use still today, where they go in and they actually redevelop the probable maximum precipitation events that we use for dam design. And so that was done probably back in
2010,
about in there. So they're a hydrometeorological subconsultant. They specialize in civil engineering applications of the weather. It's kind of a new thing that's out there. And Bob said, so radar is a big, radar and GS are big things. And so what they're doing by redeveloping these curves that we've always been able to grab from NOAA publications is they actually, what they call transposition storms, where they take actual storm events and they move them to our basin. And by moving them, we mean if a big storm occurred in Wichita, they would move it to our, and based upon average temperature, average humidity, distance from sources of water like the Gulf of Mexico, Atlantic Coast, Pacific Ocean, et cetera, they use that and they develop these curves based upon what they feel is physically possible. Instead of just being some empirical statistical analysis, they actually go in and look and do this stuff to develop something very specific to this basin. So these numbers we're showing are very specific to the Papio Basin. They wouldn't be the same in Grand Island. They wouldn't be the same in Denver. Maybe similar, but not the same.
The next task basically is going in and recalibrating the model again. We want to, if we take a real rainfall event and we apply it to this rainfall runoff model, we need that model to really predict what the gauges show during the flood event. Now, one of the first things we did was we used FEMA's model that they're proposing, and we ran through our newest storm events that occurred 2013, 2014, and what we found was that it over-predicted the peak discharges by up to double. So what should have been 6,000 CFS was coming back at 12,000 CFS. That's a huge disconnect that we had to close up. And I won't get into the details why unless you're really interested, but the end result is that if this orange curve was the original, what FEMA was saying it would have been, we're trying to match the blue. And you can barely make out in here that we've been able to do that. And so all of the alert gauges that you fund with the USGS calibrated sensing equipment, that's where this information goes. And this allows us to truth that model, make sure it really matches reality. That's really the important part to get out of this. And again, did it at all the basins. This is a really significant example where we should have had 6,000 CFS. We were getting above 13,000 CFS. So we've gone in, we've actually modified that model to try to match better what was observed. Now again, of course, the regional detention sites have been constructed. Those are in the modeling now. So all of the flood benefits from those are now represented within the mapping. And, you know, one thing that's always fun to point out is that for the tributary that watershed or that detention structure's in, we're reducing the discharges by 90-95%, of course, because we just can't get that water out of the 48-inch pipe. So these tributaries are dropped dramatically in terms of what the flood inundation is. And then the benefits, of course, carry downstream. So the nice part is with this many structures, you have a lot of benefits that are carrying forward throughout, and particularly West Papio Basin. Again, now we combine all three things together, the new area reduction factors, new temporal distributions, the new detention sites. We're finding anywhere from about 15 to 30% reductions in the discharge throughout the entire basin, and in some cases a lot more. 60% in some areas where things are, they were just way over predicted before. So just to let you know, there's universal benefits just about everywhere. So we can talk a little bit about, oh, that's interesting. We can talk a little bit about what is, hold on for one second. Oh, I see. I apologize. This right here is the existing FEMA map. Now, it's a little bit confusing, a lot of red lines. The important part is the outside line here. Pay no attention to this in the middle. And this is what was historically mapped as the floodplain. The interim update, which was just about to be mapped, is this here. And what you see is that a lot of the areas are about the same, but there are some expansions that have occurred. It's creeped out in several areas. And kind of varies based on where you're at within the watershed on how severe of an impact this was. In some cases, it was several feet. And I don't recall Exarvan numbers off the top of my head, but was it 5 feet? It was very dramatic in some areas. And so what we find here is that we've been able to push this back to at least what the original FEMA mapping was, and in most cases, slightly less. So we're looking at anywhere from about 1 foot reduction off of the stage, the elevation into this channel. This was probably the least benefited area in all of the attempts that we've done so far. So we dropped those water surface elevations by about a foot. And this is just a plot of what that looked like. It varies anywhere from 0.8 of a foot to maybe 1.5 feet through that area. So downtown Papillion, and so basically this is 66th Street, this is 84th Street. And again, we can barely make these out here, these lines. This was the old FEMA. And this was the core update. Now, what you can see is large new areas in through here, some of this area down here. And now, this area is a little bit tricky. And I'll preface this by saying that we have lowered the elevations in through this stretch by anywhere from 1 to 3 feet. And we are getting close to the point where the levees are making a lot more sense. I would say that we're anywhere between about 0.5 to 1 foot of deficient in freeboard, whereas before the levees were overtopping theoretically during this flood. So West Papillion should have amazing benefits. And if they do go forward in terms of trying to certify those levees and making improvements, this will save hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in terms of not needing to raise them quite as high. So this right here is if those levees were not existed and not shown as certified, but they are much closer than this map actually makes it to believe. And so this is kind of the benefits here, anywhere from about 2 foot down in this area, and we're 2.5 to 3 foot through this entire stretch. 84th Street, Big Papillion, I was told this is a real problem area. This I left all lines up. So the existing floodplain, as you can see, extended here, and this area is very flat. So despite the fact that we're showing 3 to 4 foot of improvement in water surface elevations, the same floodplain area is really affected. Now, the real benefit there is that when floodplain insurance is purchased, it will dramatically reduce the cost of that flood insurance. We know this area is always flood prone. It may not be a 100-year event. Maybe it's a 200-year event. So still wise to have a floodplain insurance, but the cost should go down dramatically as far as because the risk has gone down. Again, this area here, this was approximately 4 foot reduction in through this area, and that's just around the Interstate 80.
So all those profiles you're looking at there, the very top of the blue shading is what the new maps are that are being proposed, and then you can see the blue line just below that, and that's the results of this study, what that'll lower down to. It's a little difficult with the scale on the left to see exactly what it is, but shows how it kind of varies depending upon topography, as Bob said.
Right. One of the things the city had mentioned was that they're very excited because any bridge replacements that they need to take care of in the future just became a lot easier and less expensive. Yeah. The other thing, too, I do want to mention is right now this is as conservative as these models is going to get. It will only go down from here. We're still making final tweaks, so I anticipate these will come down slightly. Exarban Village, this area is very problematic and very complicated due to some modeling issues early on. What you'll see is that there were some dramatic changes from the old red line to the FEMA proposed, or the newest mapping here, and we've been able to lower that by about a foot and a half to 2 feet in through this stretch. So those flood elevations do come down quite a bit. We tried to do detailed mapping, but unfortunately these areas, it's just very flat, and it's still going to show flooding regardless. So bringing it down by 2 feet should help quite a bit with respect to that risk assessment for insurance purposes. And up here, this is actually the Nebraska Furniture Mart area, just so you can kind of get some perspective. And that is all basically removed now from the floodplain map, is what we feel. And again, we're anywhere from 2+ feet in the Pacific Street area. It tapers down. It kind of depends on where you're at. And it tapers down to almost a no change of this area. So.
So this is this table was given to you and your staff with the new FEMA mapping that was proposed. And so what's important here to see is that the SFHA is the specific flood hazard area. That's where they actually went in and looked at the 100-year floodplain there. And so there's the middle. So the top line there. So there were actually 6,048 new structures throughout the Papillion Creek Basin that were added to the floodplain. It's somewhere within the delineated floodplain, 6,000. You saw where some places went out, so they showed a decrease actually of 3,400. So the net change is 2,591 new structures with the proposed mapping that was put place. And so we're not at the ability today to give you an answer on how many of those come out, but the bottom line is that the majority of them, like I said, our goal was to get back to pre this. And so a lot of them are coming out. One of the things Bob talked about a little bit was with the aerial reduction factors is that we're actually showing with the new modeling techniques, we actually show in some of the smaller drainage areas, that's where we are seeing some small increases in the floodplain. And it depends on how far FEMA goes up and map those. The closer we get to the main channels, that's where we start seeing the larger reductions. So the larger the drainage area, the better the results of the study is going to be. So let's see. So a little bit about flood insurance real here. These are just some facts that are off of floodsmart.gov that anybody can go to. But in essence, they're just talking about where it came from, Flood Insurance Reform Act of 94. And then they talk about what kind of NFIP is National Flood Insurance Program there. It tells you what's required there. And so this was a little thing that was put together here. Flood premiums, flood insurance premiums have gone up significantly in recent years. It's really an actuarial type thing, and it really started to happen post-Katrina. You'll hear us complain about some of the very conservative engineering requirements for geotechnical design of levees. The Corps, the FEMA, most federal agencies took on a new level or a new tolerance for risk post-Katrina. And as we all know, because of Katrina and Sandy, you know, FEMA went broke. And so they had no money that would be subsidized by the federal government. And so that's probably some of the reasons why you saw these flood premiums doing what they're doing. But this is some of the information that's on there. And so the only place where they actually give you flood insurance values here, this is for commercial. We're going to show you commercial and residential here. These are for these flood area zones A and V and the cost, some of the costs that come per commercial property. So the problem is that everything we're talking about in terms of 100-year, this is outside of those. And so in order to get those costs, you have to go to an individual assurance agent or work through FEMA with NFIP, and this is what they want to know, these things. What's the elevation of your building versus the BFE, which is the base flood elevation in that area? What flood zone are you in? Now that we've done a detailed study, a lot of the flood zones that we're talking about would be zone AE, which means a study has been done and we have actual elevations and models existing. What kind of building is it? What's the value? What's the content? The other thing is that FEMA flood insurance, which it doesn't say on the website, this is in terms of talking to insurance agents, they only replace the replacement, the actual cash value. So with that, what that means is that if you've got a home and you've got carpet that's 10 years old and it cost you $10,000 to put in 10 years ago, you're not going to get $10,000 to replace that carpet. You're going to get whatever they devalue it at. So a lot of times what you have to do is you have to go get supplemental flood insurance to give you a replacement value. And a lot of times that supplemental insurance is even more expensive than the original flood insurance that gets you just the cash value. So even there, it's a little goofy. This gives some of the costs in residential coverage. Same things they say once you get into an actual flood zone, AE, these are the things they want to look at. So like Bob said, even if you're not being, as a result of the study, if your structure's not being taken out of the floodplain, if the depth's going down, that's going to have a significant impact on how much flood insurance costs you there. So they have this nice little thing on there. The average flood insurance policy costs about $700 a year. That's the flood policies for the people who aren't in the flood zone. What we found out is that, in general, we did a lot of interviewing insurance agents when we did the WP 6 and 7 economics, and we've done them recently. And what they're saying is they're starting at about $150,000 structure. They're talking about $3,500 per residence per year. That's the premiums that are paid on flood insurance to get to a policy that gives you a replacement value. Okay, so if we look at those 2,591 structures that are added to the floodplain at 3,500, and that's just residential. Some of those are commercial. Commercial is going to start, 10,000 or more, depending on what's there. And if you think about it, along the bigger channels, a lot of those buildings that are along there are more commercial retail rather than residential. There's certainly a good share of them. But if you just look at 2,591 times 3,500, that's $9 million a year. That's per year. That's if you have a mortgage on your home or on your business, that's going to be required that you pay that. If you own your home, you can choose not to buy flood insurance, of course. But if you just do the simple math there. So if we can get close to getting those almost 2,600 structures back out of the floodplain, that's a net gain to your constituents and to the watershed, to the people who benefit from the partnership, of almost $9 million a year. So this talks a little bit about what the difference is. Probably could have had that ahead of the last discussion there. In these high-risk areas, in these areas, these SFHAs, if in a 30-year mortgage for a 100-year, that basically means you have about a 1 in 4 chance of being flooded, just statistically, in a life of a 30-year mortgage. This gives some of the other flood this is some of the coverage limits. So this is the other thing, is that the flood insurance that NFIP gives you, a lot of times it isn't enough to cover the cost of the business or the home. That concludes our presentation here. Where are we doing going forward? Bob talked about we've still got a little bit of work to do. We're still working with FEMA. We've had you've had, what, 2 meetings and a couple calls with them? 1 meeting, coordination meeting?
Yeah, we've definitely had a coordination meeting.
So this is new, but they know what we're doing. It's been done in other parts of the country. We're not going to totally blindside them, so we've been kind of working with them, bring them along as we come so that they don't get a big surprise at the end. And, you don't do all the work, and then they say, well, we don't like this. So we, of course, done everything we can to avoid that. So we've met with them. The goal is to get them some preliminary information very soon here. We're working every day on this. So little things come up here and there that we have to work on. Bob mentioned a little papillion area that it's goofy because of CSO in the area. That does a lot to the frequent storms. And so we're trying to figure some of that out. So we've got a little work to do, but we've been working with staff and been very helpful in providing us everything we need to keep chugging. So at this point, I would say good news is coming for everybody. How good it is, we're going to find out at the end. Like Bob said, hopefully at the end it's even better than what we're showing you today. But as of today, we feel like it's been a real good investment on behalf of the NRD. So sorry, I know that was long. I tried to talk fast. I'd be happy to take any questions anybody has about the study.
Director Bob?
Your former offices were in Alltech Business Park. That's been part of in my sub-district. Just a year ago, they were looking at indications from FEMA. of raising the elevation of that entire park about 3 inches fence. Now you're saying that we're down about a foot. That's correct there?
That's correct.
And for the undeveloped 12 acres. So that brings his whole site out of the floodplain. Is that correct?
We'd have to look at it to be sure, but if those are the numbers, then yes, it theoretically would.
So that area right immediately next to it, I think, was still shown in the floodplain. What it means is they'd have to fill less to get it out of the floodplain in that area, if it still did remain. Everything's very shallow there. What's kind of tough here is that even though we have good LIDAR information, you know, when we talk about 6 inches, 9 inches, and those kind of things, you know, a building being a foot above the parking lot, what happens is then you get specific information about here's the elevation, and then you can get an elevational certificate to go out and say, hey, my building's a foot and a half above the floodplain here. And so, you know, you can get a certificate that says you're out of the flood hazard. So Altec's one of those areas that's so flat and so shallow through there that I'm guessing that would be the next step for them.
Any further questions from directors?
Just to piggyback what Mike and Bob presented, when I started here, we've 10 years in December. The goal of the partnership and the floodplain mapping and everything was to try to attempt so the floodplains didn't get worse. And every time we got a new map, they got progressively worse. And more people were put in the floodplain, and it was consistent. What you're seeing now is not only the benefit of new information, but we're receiving the benefits of all the work you've done for 40 years. The reservoirs hold a tremendous amount of water, period. And so all those years you're building these reservoirs and the floodplains weren't improving, but now you can see why, in fact, we did that and why, in fact, you... So I went to the chamber and I said, you know, if you can save $10 to $15 million a year in a local economy, and start adding that by tens, 10 years, 20 years, you start getting some serious, serious money. And what would you need as a chamber to recruit for a business? We hear Cabela's is leaving. We hear ConAgra's moving their headquarters, and now West Telemarketing may move. Thousands of jobs here, thousands of jobs here. And I said, so what if I could tell you we could inject $100 to $150 million in the local economy in a 10-year period? What would you as an organization have to recruit? And they gave me a list. They'd have to get a manufacturing facility that employed 500 people. They'd have to get a healthcare facility that employed 1,350. A warehouse distribution trucking company, over 1,100 employees. So that's the kind of business that they'd have to recruit to get that amount of money back into the economy here. And also then we talked about what our structures protect. Tens of billions of dollars of infrastructure and tens of billions of dollars of economic impact. Off at Air Force Base, $1.3 billion alone. And you could arguably, why is that facility still here? Because of the structures that we built. That runway wouldn't be getting improved without the structures that we built. And that's a combination of reservoirs and a combination of levees. So the economic impact is huge. But so now you're saying we are improving, for your constituents and your folks, we're improving their financial position because we improved the floodplain. Why? Because of the things that we do. There's other parts of the country that don't have either the money or the capability or the knowledge to do what we do here. So this is game changing. I don't know anywhere else in the country floodplains are reducing or going to be reduced. And so, I mean, to inject that kind of economic activity is huge. And hats off to these brilliant people who can work the modeling and everything, and hats off to this board for the last 40 years to put the investment into flood control reservoirs and levees and all those types of things. I mean, Papillion's going to be doing cartwheels down Main Street because now all of a sudden you could certify those levees with minimal cost, what we were originally talking about. That's huge. There are millions of dollars you're saving that community and the district to do those types of things. So I can't understate it enough. This is fantastic news. It's Christmas in November. But so it's going to take till, I think, these remapping or this effort will be 2019, I think. Is that correct, when the final maps will come out?
I believe that's right.
And so, I mean, this is good news, and it's huge. And thank you, gentlemen, for doing it.
And I can add a little bit more to it as well. You know, again, rainfall rates go up. New methods came in, and really these new methods just took care of the additional rainfall. The real benefits that we're seeing throughout this are really the regional detention center, I mean, those facilities. So the dams are really taking care of the majority of the benefits. I don't know if I detailed that well enough, but I did want to mention that.
Yeah, this is definitely fantastic news. I want to reflect everything that John said as well, and thank you guys for taking the initiative on this to study this and realize the benefits that we're seeing on it. And there's Valerie to come.
Yeah, well done, gentlemen. I love analytics like this and been watching it since I started on the board and how this has all come to this point in time. But let's use it even further from that. I mean, we're taking it here, but I'd like to take this out to all and with the concurrence of this body and my fellow colleagues here, I'd like to ask staff to get out and show this to the counties, everybody within our watershed in the municipalities, the counties, and show them this. This is powerful. This is really powerful. And people that don't understand what the NRD does, this is it. This is the grail. This is exactly what we do. And now we can prove it. So can you get out and do that? I'd really like to see
Blair,
that happen.
Blair has already benefited from it. We finished one study in Blair where we use this methodology to help them. They just kicked off Bob and Lindy had a meeting with Al Shoemaker yesterday to start the second round. They want to do it on their next creek. We have a meeting with the city of Omaha coming up. Sarpy County also is aware of it as well. So it's spreading already, Director Fowler, and I think
well done.
We're just here, yeah.
We'll make the rounds.
Appreciate it.
Director Lane.
Yeah, I just want to second what Director Fowler said. Be active. Fowler should want to do it as well to put it all through that support because, you know, Don, you mentioned all the benefits from the Chamber's perspective, but with the city of Omaha not having to raise their bridges or certain, I mean, that's huge to them as well. So I think presentation to every other entity is exactly called for. I may have stepped down the room where I missed some of the timeline stuff, but I heard from John. So 2019, when we expect this data to be
in a final map.
In a final map, which then allows the folks to take advantage of it.
Right.
Correct. When do we have a regular plan then to revisit the model? Because if you have a good model, how often does it get refreshed and updated? I guess will it happen maybe 2 or 3 years before the next maps happen?
That is really a question, I think, of FEMA funding. FEMA really drives that schedule. And I would have to defer to Amanda, actually, to respond to that specifically. But my understanding is it's generally somewhere between about 10 and 20 years is really the schedule they're on. But please.
So they look at the country based on need. Has there been a change in that area? So they have their metrics where they can see what areas need. So we're probably not in the area that needs to be updated every 2 years. Our last study was.
Right. Well, one thing we can do, though, as additional reservoirs are built. Now you're talking about we could say you know the question may come up, well, why build any more reservoirs? You know, you guys have improved it. Well, for every one you build, it improves it more. And another thing is then as this watershed develops, which let me just drive out to Elkhorn. Development is just marching forward. As this watershed develops, those additional reservoirs will, in fact, keep it from going back to where it was or keep it from getting worse. So actually, as you build a reservoir and you can run that in the model, that structure, and see what it does. Now, if it's a significant change, then you can get a loan. I mean, you can call FEMA or you can do a process where you can ask them to revise the maps. So you can ask them to do that process. Now, it's expensive, and you have to pay for it, but they will do that. And if it's such a huge benefit, it may be worth the time and effort to do that. So once we have the model, as reservoirs get constructed, run it. See what it does. And as additional subdivisions get built and additional runoff occurs, run it. See what it does. this is something that just won't go away. It's something
we can tell you today. I mean, you know, with the final six are planned, I guess, in the for the next phase of the or final phase of the Oak Creek Watershed Partnership, you know, we can run it today and tell you what kind of impact those would have. You know, and then based upon that answer, you could make a decision for yourself. The chance of accompanying that with another advancement in, you know, new rainfalls and everything coming out is probably pretty slim for a while, at least. This is taking a long time for this to come about, really. And so, and the timing of it just happened to coincide with the completion of 15A5 and the final design being conducted on 6 and 7.
Right.
So, the last, just a coincidence there.
The last NOAA data was 1960. Or in the 60s.
1960.
So that was our That's update. Right. Yeah. So we were dealing with 1960s information until the last NOAA data dump.
One thing to know too about these maps is we've prepared these with future conditions in mind. So theoretically, the effort was put in place to estimate what future conditions would be. Extra runoff is already really taken into account in these models. So realistically, they shouldn't get any worse than what you're seeing in these unless there's some very dramatic change from what was estimated. And so any regional detention sites that get added will only serve to take it down further.
So ultimate build out of the watershed.
Right.
Any further questions from directors?
All right. Okay, thank you
very much.
All right, moving on to agenda item number 9, subcommittee reports. 9A is the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee for the Southern Sarpy Watershed Management Plan, and that is me. Be it resolved that the minutes of the November 7th, 2016 meeting of the ad hoc consultant selection subcommittee of the Southern Sarpy Watershed Management Plan are accepted. Incorporated in these minutes in the following recommendation of the subcommittee is hereby adopted and approved. The initial screening for proposals for consultant selection interviews, it is recommended that the subcommittee request interviews with Fire Engineering, HDR Engineering, and JEO Consulting Group with CH2M Hill, or CH2M, in the order presented on December 1st, 2016 at 6 p.m. On behalf of the subcommittee, I so move. All right, we have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ross.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Portal.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Shepard.
Yes. All right, moving on to 9B, Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee, Director John Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be it resolved that the minutes of the November 7th, 2016 meeting of the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee are accepted, incorporated in these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Number one is a renewal of USGS maintenance agreement for Papio flood warning system gauges. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute a proposed joint funding agreement with the USGS in the amount of $151,520 in district funds for the operation of the district's flood warning system for 2017, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff? Or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Ross.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Portal.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
And Sherpas.
Yes.
Now, item number two is a mutual release and settlement agreement regarding the Washington County Rural Water Project number two. It's an interlocal agreement and third addendum to the interlocal agreement. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute the proposed mutual release and settlement agreement and the proposed third addendum to the Interlocal Cooperation Act agreement by and among the Papio Missouri River Natural Resource District, the City of Blair, Nebraska, and the County of Washington, Nebraska, for Washington County Rural Water Project Number 2, as presented to the subcommittee, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We once again have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll Director Conley.
This is a long time coming, and I want to just express my thanks to all that worked so hard to get us to this point. We've got a kind of a burr under our saddle that's gone away. So I'm just so happy to see this.
Thank you, Director Conley. Any further comments or questions from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Blakey.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Brad Thomas.
Aye.
John Thomas.
Yes.
Fowler.
Aye.
Cross.
Yeah.
Manchip.
Yes.
Item number 3 is a temporary grading easement for Pier 15 at Pampio Dam Site 15A. Subcommittee recommends the general manager be authorized to execute the proposed temporary grading easement to Pier 15 LLC, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Frost.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but were they going to put a pier in too?
They would like to, but it's a future, something in the future they may do, but not now. So this is just for the road.
I was just wondering what they were going to get out of it if they're going to put a pier in.
Yeah, I don't know if that's either going to happen or not. Lori, did you? I mean,
So they will be doing grading for the possibility of the pier won't be constructed at the time. That'll be for at such time as well. As some of your operate.
Right. And it's all at their cost. So it's no cost to the district.
But they'll have no rights to it.
Yeah. No, it's a public. It'll be public action.
It would be part of.
Any further questions from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Ray.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Brad Thomas.
Aye.
John Thomas.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Manchip.
Yes.
And item 4 is the West Branch Channel Drainage Structure Cleaning Project. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute a contract with Kirk Underground Technologies, Inc. in the amount not to exceed $53,000 for the West Branch Channel Drainage Structure Cleaning Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Caesar.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Brad Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ross.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Andrew.
Yes.
And that completes my report.
Thank you, Director Conley. Moving on to 9C, Finance, Expenditures, and Legal Subcommittee, Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Be it resolved, the minutes of the November 7, 2016 meeting of the FEL Subcommittee are hereby accepted and incorporated into these minutes, and the following recommendations of the Subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. 1, discussion of draft fiscal year 2016 audit. This was an informal item. No action was taken by the subcommittee. Is there any discussion?
It's informational.
Hearing none. Item number 2, Big Patio Channel Project, Porter Mastertoon signed a license agreement with Properties Ventures, Amerian Inc. Time extension recommendations that the GM be authorized to extend the deadline for signed rehabilitation for Property Ventures Marin Inc. at 3503 South 84th Street on Big Tapio Channel Project right away to January 31st, 2017, and that the license agreement be revoked and the sign be removed if the work is not completed by January 31st, 2017. And I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Frost.
If they don't refurbish this thing, it's on their dime to tear it out, right?
I don't think it's ours. It's on our property. It'd be our sign to tear down.
It belongs to them, though.
No, actually, it's on our property. We gave them an agreement to operate and maintain it and improve it. But ultimately, it's our sign. Is that correct, Stephen? Okay.
Director Johnson.
So, to remove it, it cost us how much? 30.
I don't know. Bill might be able to just pull it down with his bulldozer.
In-house. We have in-house capabilities. Yeah. Okay, anyway, to convert it to an eagle's nest? Come on.
Bat houses?
Yeah. I'd see bees that go there. He's with me.
It might be out of the floodplain now.
All right. Any further comments from directors?
Never did get those poles in, where's Martin? Those poles down in Bellevue, those were never converted to eagle's nest either, were they?
Oh.
All right. They're still up?
I don't think they are.
Okay, well, I'm still thinking of the birds.
So we've got options.
The Air Force doesn't like them.
Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Thompson.
Yes.
Udo.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Red Hunt.
Aye.
Johnson.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Abstain.
Lady.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Yes.
Item 3, transfer deed of Prairie Queen Recreation Area to the City of Papillion. Recommendation that the GM be authorized to execute the transfer deed with the City of Papillion for Prairie Queen Rec Area and that the district retain the previously declared surplus property along Highway 370, subject to changes deemed necessary by the GM and approved and formed by legal counsel. And I so move.
And once again, I have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Thompson.
Is there going to be any kind of formal ceremony on this? Or sign this, please, Mayor.
Yeah, I don't. We haven't planned anything. Go ahead, Amanda. Do you have any ideas on this?
So the last piece is finishing up this legal description that gets attached, and then the Papillion City Council will approve the transfer deed as well. So there might be something when they do, but we've got some legal description work to do first before anyone celebrates.
Yeah. Is it a dollar or 10?
What's that?
For the transfer.
For the transfer.
It's a big project.
It is.
Significant.
We'll work with the plan and maybe they'll work.
A cake in the shape of
All right. Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Poodle.
Yes.
Honest.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Peter.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
That concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Teaser. Agenda item 10, the Treasurer's Report. Once again, Director John Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Treasurer's Report consists of the resolution involving items 10A through 10I inclusive, and I move their approval.
Second. All right, we have a motion and a second on the agenda item. Would anybody from the public wish to discuss this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Frost.
Yeah.
Leahy.
Yes.
Ray.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Poodle.
Yes.
Yes.
And that completes that report.
Thank you, Director Conley. Agenda item 11, legal update. I don't believe we have anything for this evening, so we'll move on to agenda item 12, the chairperson's report. The first thing to discuss is the 2017 National Association of Conservation Districts annual meeting in Denver, Colorado. Each of you should have a packet in your books, so if you have any interest in going, please contact me directly, and we'll get that lined up if available. Secondly, obviously the elections took place earlier this week. I want to congratulate everybody that will be sitting with us. Are there any other candidates in the audience other than Director Japp or future Director Japp? Welcome. Please feel free to reach out to me or John Winkler at any point in time. We'd love to meet with you and get things caught up.
I've got you on my list to call tomorrow.
I've got
to
apply.
Okay. Okay.
And if you could, could you just please introduce yourself real quick for the rest of the board?
My name is John Weiss. I'm District 11, Harvey County. Newly elected.
All right. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Director Bond.
Not to interrupt your report, but I wanted to share with the organization that twice this week I received some really nice accolades. I had the occasion to go over to the Sarkey County Salute to Our Veterans annual dinner, and our tickets got mixed up, and I was moved from one table of people from St. John Vianney to a larger table where I just didn't know anybody. So my guest and I ended up sitting with some Army Corps folks and some older Sarpy County residents, and they just absolutely showered me. It was almost embarrassing. I was so tired from all the week's activities that, just susceptible. I almost got really weepy. But they just showered this organization with accolades, our staff and this board. So they're really appreciative of what we've done in Sarpy County with some of the damn things. So I just want to say it was a pleasure this week to have been a member of this board. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Bonnet. We certainly appreciate the time and effort you've put toward it. On that note, we'll go ahead and move along to Agenda Item 13, the General Manager's Report, John Winkler.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Information report is attached for your review for October. We have attached some correspondence from Mark Crown and Scott Usery from Omaha Velocity thanking Eric Williams and the crew for cleaning the Keystone Trail and repairing some of the drainage there. Real quick, general election results I've attached for your review. Again, congratulations to Ted Japp, Subdistrict 1, Larry Bradley, Subdistrict 3, Rich Teaser, Subdistrict 5, Patrick Leahy, Subdistrict 7, Mark Grunwald, Subdistrict 9, and John Weiss, who's here tonight as well, from Subdistrict 11. And departing board members will be recognized, obviously, for their services at the December board meeting. So we appreciated all your service and efforts. Report on purchases, construction services, professional services, and personal property for October is attached, as well as the current and ongoing project with the district legal counsel. Another great event today, and unfortunately I was unable to attend due to a meeting with the Corps, but South Omaha Trail ribbon cutting. And I believe five directors were there. Yep. And I think Director Thompson, there's pictures. Director Thompson spoke. And so, Eric, would you like to give a rundown, or one of the directors that were there, Jim, if you'd like to, and whoever was there, if they'd like to talk
Jim
about it?
Enough. I don't
know. So, yeah, there were probably about three dozen people at the event. It was great. There were a couple city council members. A couple of our directors spoke, Dr. Thompson, Dr. Fowler, Chris Jerem from Omaha City Council. Brooke Bench, the parks director, was there. Dr. Thompson, that's your grandson, is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, so he was there for the event. That's a little guy in yellow there in the middle. There's the official ribbon cutting to open the trail. It had been open to the east of this location since about June, but now it's officially open for people like that to enjoy in the future. And there were a number of people just on the trail already. Those guys were coordinated, I think, to come over to the event and basically thank us for all the work we've put into this. But probably two dozen people throughout the event, and as I walk through later, were just on the trail, totally unrelated to the event, and just continued to say, thank you, this is such a great project. That's the F Street Bridge. This is the old rail corridor portion. It looks really great. It's going to be, as the seating continues to develop, it's going to be a great area. Those two guys were on a long run. They said they continued to run down just so they could get into the picture, but then kind of regretted it because they'd been running for several miles already. This guy stopped to take a picture. He's from Council Bluffs. He thanked us for all of the trail work we do and was riding back over to Council Bluffs from where he was here. There's a nice shot of the retaining wall, which is a big part of the cost, but a big accomplishment to get that trail up and away from the railroad. And then there were several members of community advocacy groups there. So Julie Harris from the Nebraska Bicycling Alliance, Pell Duvall, Julie's in the red. On the right is Pell Duvall from Omaha Bikes, Madison Hoagland from Live Well Omaha, Eastern Nebraska Trail Network are Pete in the yellow and Gary in the blue, Ben Turner from B-Cycle, and then two of our directors. So, there was a lot of community appreciation for this project. And so just thanks very much for your dedication to this. I was glad to be here at the very end and to be able to be there and involved in the project. But I know that the community really appreciates everything that you've done for this project over the last 10 years.
Thank you. And thank you, Eric, for the presentation. I won't repeat what I said this afternoon, but it was a 10-year project. And Director Fowler and I, and the rest of the directors, I did thank the the directors, I think there might have been about 16, 17 different directors involved in this over time, including those present now. And to get this thing on the ground, get it going, there's more to do. I didn't bring my grandson as a prop, but it turned out to be a great prop because we build these things, just as we talk about building reservoirs for future generations. And next year when he takes his training wheels off his bike, he'll be using it. I'll be alongside him. So it's really for him. He's 4 years old, and hopefully when he's my age, long time, I don't know where he'll be then. But anyways, but this is an asset to the community and a great asset because it's east-west connection. It's the first east-west connection we have in our 140-mile trail system. So it's great, it's wonderful, and there's going to be a lot of activity on it, and we need to build some more, and I look forward to the support of the board and future board members coming on to continue this aspect of our program.
Okay. Anybody else? Director Fowler or Director Leahy or anybody else there? No?
No, just Osman. Since I got on the board, this is went right through my district, and I said, I am going to get this thing done, and if it kills me. But
well, I'm excited now because the first time I ever talked to Director Thompson or Director Fowler, the first thing on their mouth is, what's the status on the South Omaha? So now they'll have to come up with something new to either call me or to address me.
We'll work on it.
But obviously everybody is huge work, and it's a huge accomplishment. So I was upset or regretful that we couldn't be there, but we had Marlon and I had core issues to deal with. So. Eric, but thank you for being there as well. For this,
just for future reference, it's still 10 years to build, and the Hoover Dam took 5 years. But they had more people working.
Hope everyone has a happy Thanksgiving. Obviously, that's coming up before we see each other again, and that concludes my report.
Thank you, John. Agenda item 14, informational items. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. Just briefly on that, I know there are several members on the board and the staff that are veterans. It is a pleasure working with all of you. If you would, just for a moment, please stand up to be recognized by the rest of the folks in the room, if you'd be so kind. Thank you, everyone, and those of you that that have it off tomorrow, enjoy the day off. Outside of that, to reflect John Winkler, I hope everybody has a happy and safe Thanksgiving with their family. The next board meeting will be, when's the next board meeting? December 8th, right here in the office. With that, we are adjourned.
And happy birthday.